And then I'll take and I'll boil those traps with some either logwood dye or walnut hulls, and that'll help to kind of blacken and treat that trap. And then once you're done with that, you'll dump that out, and you'll put some fresh water in there, and you'll throw in some wax. So you'll get that wax in there, and that wax will melt, and it will coat the top of that water. It floats. And then you'll take your traps, and you'll just dip them in that wax and pull them out. Hang them up, go to the next one. Dip all your traps in that wax.
Camel boots on my feet, bow in my hand, walking in the early dawn to climb the
Redbone, what would you say if I could tell you that you could kill a buck on a certain day?
I would say you're crazy. There's no way to predict how the bucks are going to move.
Well, you're wrong. There's a new camera out called Wise Eye Technologies. These guys can predict the actual deer movement, exact time that a deer is going to come through.
Really? Wise Eye Technology?
This camera has 5-megapixel pictures, has a GPS system built inside, and it's an experience using this camera. It collects data and tells you the movement, wind direction, everything.
On a camera?
On a camera. WiseEyeTechnologies.com.
And how do I find out more information about these guys?
You go to WiseEyeSmartCam.com. I'm using them. You should, too. Make your hunt easier.
Use WiseEye presents Welcome to American Roots Outdoors. Redbone, Wayne, and myself. I'm calling via phone from downtown Birch Street. I've got the croup today, so if I go to the coffin, guys, I apologize. This is part 4 of wildlife management. And again, we've got Eddie Owens coming back and will join us in segment 2. Before we go there, I must have to admit, and I hate to do it, but Redbone, you've been right about the NFL playoffs.
Well, most of them. And Wayne was telling me, and I forgot that I picked the Steelers because I was doing the pity pick the first week. But
ouch,
yeah, I've got every game but one I've gotten right so far, including all 4 games last weekend. And boy, what about that Chiefs and Bills game? That was one of the best football games I've ever seen.
That was a good game, and it just goes to prove it doesn't matter how old you are, you can still play in the NFL, because I see they brought Scott Norwood back to kick the final field goal.
Yeah, Mr. Wide Right.
Mr. Wide Right.
Wide Right.
Don't you know he, I bet he's thinking about, and I mean, I'm not joking about it. He's really down.
Oh,
I
yeah.
I guarantee that man's down. I pray for him.
Yeah, but you know what those guys, I think most of them understand at that level, and if they don't, they should, is there were so many other plays throughout the course of the game.
That could have changed it.
They could have changed it and never put him in that position. And I think those guys understand that. But that doesn't ease the pain of, you know, kicking to send the game to overtime or at least tying it up with the potential of overtime.
Right.
Patrick Mahomes still would have had the ball with 1:40 left. So you never know what would have happened there. But anyway, yeah, I feel bad for Bass, the kicker, but I was sure glad when that ball went wide right. And did you also notice?
Oh man!
Did you also notice that the fans were throwing snowballs at the Chiefs players at the end of the game, and they were all missing wide right too?
It reminded me of the Cleveland fans. They used to throw snowballs all the time too at the opposing team players.
Anyway, so let's keep with our tradition here the last 3 weeks. This pick for this weekend. We got the Detroit Lions playing the San Francisco 49ers in San Francisco. Who you got, Alex?
Man, I want the Lions to win. I do. I don't support anything that's out there, you know what I'm saying, on the left. Detroit and San Francisco are both left, but I think they are the lighter side of the left at Detroit than they are in San Francisco. So I'm going to go with Detroit, and I'm going to go with my Chiefs. That's my hopes. But there is controversy in social media. There's guys making posts saying, if you look at the Super Bowl emblem, it's got the San Francisco 49ers and the Ravens colors.
I don't believe any of that stuff. They're also now crying about the officiating crew that's been assigned to the Chiefs Ravens game, saying that they favor the Chiefs. So anyway, that's all.
All these conspiracies.
Yeah. See, I'm gonna go with San Francisco and Kansas City.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that's probably what it's going to be. I do.
My heart wants Detroit to win, but my brain says it's going to be San Francisco. Although I would love to see the San Francisco 49ers go in there and Brock
Purdy
go in there and show him why he's not Mr. Irrelevant. Detroit's a great story. You know, I mean, to go all them years, and I know Barry Sanders would probably be at the game, and he'll be crying if they win. And there's a lot to that because he put his heart and soul in that city and could never get them to where they needed to be because they just couldn't build a team around them. But there's a good story behind Detroit, but man, it's just the 49ers are just playing such great football right now.
So many weapons. And I'm with you. My heart would say Detroit in Kansas City. But my brain says San Francisco in Kansas City. And Kansas City is a brain and heart. I mean, I just think the Chiefs are playing so well defensively that they can stop the Ravens.
Yeah, I would say probably a week ago I might have picked Kansas City over the Ravens. Ravens got home field advantage on this one. They are fantastic at home.
So were the Cowboys.
And Tooney's hurt. So I think that's going to affect the Chiefs' play offensively with Tooney being out this week. You've got a left guard that's not going to be playing, and the backup is not Tooney. I mean, he's an all-pro for a reason. So you miss an all-pro lineman, that can make a difference.
Well, Tooney is still listed as questionable.
He can't bench press 100 pounds. I don't know how he's going to push a defensive lineman away.
Technique.
We'll see. I don't think he'll play. I think that pectoral strain is going to be too much.
We'll see what happens.
But if he makes the Super Bowl, he'll definitely be playing in the Super Bowl.
Oh, absolutely.
Hey, let's switch gears here. Let's talk about high school sports. What about those Thayer Bobcats, man? And what about the Liberty Eagles? Let's talk about them, Red Bull.
Well, to keep rolling, I know the Eagles had a nice win the other night over Alton. A game that they actually had a 22-point lead and let Alton get back in it. Alton cut it down to 5 at one point, but then Liberty held on and got the victory there. And so, Liberty Eagles are getting better every night. Do want to give a shout-out. I don't know if you heard, Alex, but we're recording on Wednesday. Tuesday night, Terrell Gaines overtook Kevin Irving as the all-time leading scorer at Liberty High School.
That is correct. He did it last night playing against Marshfield. And I think they had a 20-plus margin win last night.
Okay.
Liberty was seeded number 3 in the Mountain Grove tournament, and Marshfield was seeded 7th, I believe, or 6th.
That would have been 6.
Liberty is really—they've really tightened up, and they're playing really good ball.
All right, and Thayer Bobcats are too. Although on Tuesday night they got challenged by Ethan Cotter and Bakersfield. The Cotter kid threw in 30 for Bakersfield. If you're out there and you haven't seen this Cotter kid play from Bakersfield, he is phenomenal. I mean, but anyway, Thayer beat Bakersfield by 4, I think it was, 66-62. They continue to roll, and this weekend, as you're hearing this show, Thayer Bobcats hopefully will be playing later Saturday afternoon for the Bolivar Tournament Championship. So good luck to all the area teams out there.
Good luck to all the schools around Cape Girardeau, always Sykeston, Dexter, Poplar Bluff, Salem, Missouri, Ava, Springfield area, and Northern Arkansas. You know, all the schools around Harrison, Salem, Island, Mammoth, all those schools in our area, all the high school kids.
Absolutely.
If you'd like to hear your school mentioned during our show, give Redbone the information. We'll be glad to mention it. And we support all of you because you support us. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, we have Eddie Owens going to join us. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more America Roots Outdoors right after this.
Hey, y'all. It's Tyler Farr. And you're hanging with me and my good buddy, Alex Rutledge, on American Roots Outdoors.
Cutting off the farm, wishing on some luck. I've been on a big boy for a while. I can load him in the back of my truck. We can take it to a holler.
Hey, Redbone, did you hear about that new deer feed?
What new deer feed?
Hey, Buck Grits, boys, you ain't heard of that yet?
Buck Grits?
BuckGrits.com.
Well, tell us about it. What makes it better than any other deer feed?
Well, Buck Grits has got the protein a deer needs, it's got the fat a deer needs, it's got the amino acids, it's got the energy, it's got it all, brother. It's going to bring them back after the rut, and it's going to put a rack on their head.
And it's going to help the lactating does, I assume, too, after they have the fawns.
That's right. Keep the fawns going and get them for the next crop.
Well, where can I get Buck Grits?
buckgrits.com. You can get a sample, you can order it directly from the website, and we're coming to a retailer near you.
If you want to help a deer herd, use Buck Grits.
Across the creek of a big old hill, year after year, got my hunting gear.
Buck Grits presents Welcome Back to American Roots Outdoors. We talked about high school sports, NFL, in segment one, and we're excited again about this show this week. And our topics have been the last 4 weeks is wildlife management. Again, Eddie Owens is going to join us, extraordinaire trapper and predator hunter from Mountain View, Missouri. This guy, he's just a master at everything he does when it comes to these predators. And we get great content from Eddie, and he knows what he's talking about. Welcome to the show, Eddie.
Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, we called you, and you was in a meeting. You said, let me button this meeting up. I like the way you roll. And said, I'll call you right back. So Eddie calls us back. Eddie, I know you got a competition coming up, or you just done a competition. Talk about that with us.
We just finished it up. It was this past Saturday and Sunday, a day and a half competition. It was some of the most brutal temperatures we had coyote hunted in. The first morning when we pulled up to our first stand, my thermometer on the truck said 1 degree, but we had about a 10 to 15 mile an hour north wind. And all day long, my mustache and beard was a pretty much a solid chunk of ice. But we did pretty good. There was 107 teams that entered the competition. We ended up placing sixth overall. We ended up with two coyotes, a fox, and a bobcat. And every one of these animals could have been killed with a shotgun.
Wow.
They were the farthest shot I had to stop the coyote because she was charging in hard. I stopped her at around, 75 yards. When she finally checked up, I missed her on that shot. She, just as I squeezed the trigger, she made one last hop and chest on with me. And I was holding on the left shoulder. When she made that last little hop, I shot right past her, but I redeemed myself. I hit her running at about 150 yards and wowed her up.
Nice.
But it was not an easy competition. You know, we had a lot of competitors, and I think first place on that competition brought in seven coyotes. So they did their homework. They grounded out. I mean, they had to. So it was a tough competition. Anybody that brought in an animal, they had to work for it. So the first day of the competition, I called in a coyote on the first stand and it caught me off guard. I ended up shooting it with a rifle at about 8 steps. And that was all we called in that first day. Second day, I started my truck, let it start warming up, and told the wife, she was my partner in the hunt. I was like, let's just walk down here in the brush and call. You know, the neighbors had done some logging right across the fence. There's a lot of treetops and everything in there. I set her up where she could see over the hill down on the downwind side. And I set up about 15 yards from a treetop, had the call setting on that. And I had at about the three to four minute mark of KG Cottontail, I turned it down and I was fixing to go into a different sound. And as soon as I turned that call all the way down, I saw the back of something slipping over that treetop. And I dropped my remote, grabbing my shotgun, and a bobcat poked its head up at about 15 yards. And I froze. I mean, we locked eyes. I froze and just slowly brought that shotgun up. And as soon as the bead touched his chest, I squeezed the trigger, and bobcat was gone. So I switched over into baby cottontail, played it for about 3 minutes, and turned it down and went right straight into juvenile red fox distress. And about a minute and a half mark, had a red fox pop out at about 15 yards.
Wow.
So it was about 5 minutes apart. I had a bobcat and a fox on the ground, both shotgun.
Yeah. Eddie, would you say that they, I mean, you know, deer hunting or even turkey hunting, you say they were coming in hard? I mean, for them to come in that close, I mean,
when I say coming in hard, I mean, now bobcat, you don't usually see those coming in hard. They're sneakers. They're cats. But mm-hmm. your red fox and your coyote, when they're coming in hard, they're coming in to attack that call. So that's why I carry a shotgun on pretty much every stand.
Yeah. And would you attribute that to the cold weather and the frozen ground and the fact that they were having trouble finding stuff to eat?
I would say so, yes. Because that second day when I called in that coyote, I saw her coming from about 300 yards, and she was hopping and running through the brush to get to me. Wow. And that was on cagey cottontail. There was no breeding sounds, no vocals played. I started off with cagey cottontail, and I killed her on cagey cottontail. I had her from the time I turned the call on to the time I had her shot was about 3 minutes.
Wow. Now you had said that hunting in these conditions is rough. One would almost think it would be easier because these animals are going to be desperate for food and be more apt to come into a call easier. But you're saying that that's not necessarily the case.
Not necessarily, because, you know, when you've got a wind like that, like it was Saturday, I mean, them coyotes don't like to get too far from cover. You know, you need to figure out where they're at, which is where your reconnaissance comes in, your early season scouting, whether it's putting the trail cams on dens, or, you know, you catch a snowy day, go out look for tracks. If you can figure out where they're holding up throughout the day, then if you know, it's real windy, you got to move in closer. You got to make it easier for them, because they're, you know, the colder it gets, the more calories they need to survive. Mm-hmm. So if it's cold and it's windy and they got to cover a half a mile for one rabbit, they're probably not going to do it.
Okay.
You know, even though they're hungry, they're like, oh man, I just don't want to burn that energy because I might not be the first coyote to that rabbit.
Right.
You know, so you need to figure out where they're holding up through the day. You need to close in on those. If it's windy or if it's midday and it's cold, get in close and entice them. So I think you'll have better odds that way.
That's a good tip. That if it's windy.
That's a great tip.
Yeah, if it's windy, you're going to have to move closer to where you think they're bedding at. That's a good tip. Yeah. I like that.
It's about time for, you know, and we need to take a break here. And so we'll go to a break. We're going to have more with Eddie Owens, and we're going to talk, I think some trapping. And as we continue with ways to help manage wildlife and help the wildlife in your area. Back in just a moment on American Roots Outdoors with Alex Rutledge and his friend.
Hey, everybody. This is Michael Watting with Bone Collector, and you're listening to my buddy Alex Rutledge on American Roots Outdoors, man. Don't miss an episode.
In my old pair of hunting boots, passed on down, planted deep in the ground, around your heart, so you never gotta worry.
Hey guys, it's food plot planting time here in the Ozarks and all across the country. What are you planting this year, Wayne?
I'm going to put some smorgasbord in with a whole lot of clover.
You're going to put some extra clover in it.
What? Smorgasbord? What is smorgasbord?
Man, it is a variety of annuals and perennials that'll get you through fall time, winter time, and all the way into spring.
It's awesome. You want to plant healthier food plots to track all kinds of game? Go to www.eagleseed.com. It's a smorgasbord. You know, we all get tired of certain things. The smorgasbord has everything. Your deer will love it. Eagleseed.com.
American Roots.
Hornady Ammunition presents Welcome Back to American Roots Outdoors, segment 3 of our show. Eddie Owens, our special guest, a trapper extraordinaire, predator hunter extraordinaire. And Eddie, you just talked about your competition, and congratulations in making, you know, the top 10. You were 6th out of 100 and some teams. And man, you guys that's out there predator hunting, everybody's listening, if you're trapping or you're predator hunting, I am personally taking my hat off right now, sitting in my truck, and I'm thanking you for doing what you're doing to help control these predators to help our turkey numbers. I am seeing more turkeys than I have seen in years here in the Ozarks, and I'm talking to people that's seeing the same thing. Wayne Redbone, are you hearing and seeing the same thing? Eddie?
Yeah, I am.
Well, I appreciate that. Go ahead, Redbone.
Yeah, I was going to say, what I'm hearing at the coffee shop and around is people are seeing not giant flocks of turkeys right now, but they're seeing bigger flocks of turkeys than they have in the past 3, 4, 5, 6 years. Wayne, what about you?
For me, I'm going to say it's definitely increased in population because for the first time in 3 years, I'm actually having to stop on the road to let turkeys cross just on my way home. And that is a good sign.
Great sign. Yeah. And of course, we just had a record deer kill, you know, 346,000 deer total in Missouri this past deer season, archery and everything combined, beat the old record by 40,000.
Wow.
Yeah, I've seen more turkeys this year than I have in probably the last 6 to 8 years. And one of the farms that we hunt during the competition and just periodically throughout the year, we saw one flock on it. I think I counted 28 birds in that flock.
And it was beautiful. Where did you say that farm was?
I want to make an announcement, guys, if I can, Redbone. Yeah. I don't think you and Wayne know about this yet, but the world don't know about it yet, but you're getting ready to see a lot of press on this. You're going to see Eddie Salter, Matt Moret, and myself doing a seminar at the NWTF National Convention at 10 a.m. Saturday morning at the Convention Center. And it's called HS Legends, Where They Are Now. So we're going to be there answering questions, talking about our past history with HS and with the NWTF, and what we're doing now and what we can do to encourage other people to become members of the NWTF. I also want to give a shout out for Turkeys for Tomorrow. They're doing a great job in helping us trying to get our resource back of the wild turkey. But again, thank you to the predator hunters and trappers for what you're doing. And it's going to be a great time at the NWTF. And Eddie, my question, Hornady. We talk about bullets a lot with you. Then we're going to hurry up and get right into sapping. What is your favorite caliber to hunt predators, and what bullet with Hornady do you shoot?
Well, I tell you, I'm pretty torn between two different calibers for hunting predators. If I was just going to hunt predators in this area, I would have to say a .22-250. And I shoot a VMAX bullet out of that .22-250, whether it be a 50 or a 55 grain. I've had pretty good success with that VMAX, out of that .22-250. It gets a lot of bad press in a .223 caliber, but once again, shot placement. So, I mean, it's a hard bullet to beat when you're talking hunting predators, you know, because you get decent penetration, you get good explosive expansion with minimal hide damage. So, if you're looking to save hides, that VMAX bullet in a .223 or .22-250 is a pretty impressive round. I like the .22-250 over the .223 for the fact the bullet drop. You know, if I zero all my hunting rifles at 200 yards, and on the .22-250 at 300 yards, all I have to do is put the crosshairs on the shoulder, and I'm going to hard shoot that coyote. On the .223, you're going to have to elevate, you know, 8 to 10 inches to be able to make that same shot, and you're losing energy at 300 yards on the .223, where at 300 yards on the .250, that's a dead animal.
Beautiful. Let's move into trapping. To everybody out there that's never trapped before, Eddie, how can they get started?
I've had a few conversations with some people recently on that. I mean, honestly, you need a half a dozen decent traps. They don't have to be the best of the best. They just need to be able to go off and hold an animal. So you need half a dozen decent traps, a couple of decent long call lures, a little bit of bait. Anything could work for bait. You know, deer trimmings. If a person thinks they might do some trapping, when you're quartering up your deer after deer season, save those trimmings, throw them in a bucket, freeze them, you know, save them for trapping season. I've done that. It works phenomenal for catching bobcats and coyotes. You need a sifter, some way to dig a hole, dig a dirt hole, some earth anchors, and you're pretty well good to go. If you start off slow, you know, just get your bare essentials and then see if you like it. And kind of go from there. Sky's the limit, you know. It's a fun hobby to get into. It's a good time killer, you know. So deer season ends, and you can trap till sometime in February. If you're water trapping, you can trap for a long time, and then and you can help the wildlife out in the process.
Yeah, I was going to mention real quick, if I may interrupt, Wayne Redbone, Jared Phillips Truck Repair, one of our partners, sponsors of our radio show, he'd been trapping all fall when it's been legal, of course, and he uses cat food. He's catching a lot of coons with cat food. And if you want to help the turkey numbers, start killing all the raccoons you can and obey the law, of course. But cat food is what he's mixing, and that's what he's using. So,
Cat food does work pretty good, especially if you're wanting to target coon and possum. Using them dog-proof traps, you dump a little bit of that cat food down in there. They've got to reach down past that trigger, get them a handful, and then when they're trying to pull their hand back out, then they set that trap off, and there they are. It's perfect for coon.
How crucial is it to be scent free with your traps and when you're setting traps? Talk about that.
Absolutely of the utmost importance, especially if you're trying to trap a canine. You know, whether it's a red fox or a coyote, you want to make sure you are scent free 100%, the best you can. You know, if I'm setting traps, I'm wearing my muck boots, my rubber boots. I've got a pad. I've got a foam rubber pad that I kneel on. I don't want my scent at the base of that trap. I use rubber gloves for setting the trap. And then when I go to bait, I will change gloves. You don't ever set your trap with the same gloves that you bait with, because if you do, they will dig that trap up. So
leave that red bone, Wayne.
I've got two sets of rubber gloves, and you've got to make sure you know which one's which. So to make sure they're not two gloves of the same kind.
Because
if you set that trap and you bed that trap with those scent-covered gloves, they're going to smell that, and they're going to dig your trap up.
What about putting your knee on the ground? Your clothes.
So that's where my foam rubber pad comes in. I'll throw it down, and I'll kneel on that pad. So the only thing touching the ground is that foam rubber pad and the toe of my rubber boots. So I don't let my jeans, my coat, or nothing touch the ground anywhere around my trap set. So scent control is absolutely number one when you're trapping, even when you're baiting or when you're trying to find a place to set a trap. You know, if you've got a log road cut through the timber, and you know that it's prevailing northwest wind, you're going to try and set that trap on the north side of the road so that a coyote cruising through will always catch that scent. So, you know, if that coyote's cruising through and you've got your trap set on the south side of the road and it's a south wind, it may never smell it. It may never know it's there. So you try to set it on the prevailing wind side so that when they're cruising through, they'll catch that scent and they'll come in and check out your set.
All right. And right there is where we need to take a break. All right, and great information. We've got more with Eddie Owens coming up and just a whole lot more. You're listening to American Roots Outdoors Radio with Alex Rutledge and friends, back in just a moment.
Hi, everybody. This is Aaron Tippin, and you're listening to my old buddy Alex Rutledge with American Roots Outdoors and good friends.
Accurate, deadly, dependable, Hornady ammunition. From a two-man operation in 1949 to a world-leading innovator of bullet, ammunition, reloading tool, and accessories design and manufacturer today, Hornady, each piece is hand-inspected to ensure consistency and quality. Ammunition engineered to perform flawlessly, simply put, the best. Hornady ammunition. Find Hornady ammunition at a retailer near you and at Hornady.com.
Soil Pro Outdoors and Legacy Farm Land Specialist LLC presents. Welcome back to segment four of our show. Again, we've been with Eddie Owens, our special guest. Again, I say it every segment, trapper, predator hunter, extraordinaire. When he's telling these stories, Wayne Redbone, I can actually see them in my mind, what he's talking about.
And I think touching on being set free will educate a lot of our listeners. And I think something we should talk about, Wayne, Redbone, Eddie, is what do you do to prepare your traps to make sure they're set free? Talk about that.
That's a pretty good one there, because, you know, your trap preparation is pretty crucial, especially from year to year. So, you know, when you pull them for the, at the end of the year, you're not worried about scent control. You're just, you're gathering everything up and you're hanging it in the shed. And so, you know, if you got mice in your shed and the mice are running all over the traps, they're leaving scent. So, so at the beginning of the year, best thing you can do is soak all those traps in a little bit of a vinegar water solution to take all the rust off. And then I'll take and I'll boil those traps with some either logwood dye or walnut hulls, and that'll help to kind of blacken and treat that, that trap. And then once you're done with that, you'll dump that out, and you'll put some fresh water in there, and you'll throw in some wax. So you'll get that wax in there, and that wax will melt, and it will coat the top of that water. It floats. And then you'll take your traps, and you'll just dip them in that wax and pull them out. Hang them up, go to the next one. Dip all your traps in that wax, and that helps to treat and prevent any corrosion. But it also, where that wax really helps is getting those traps to fire super, super fast. So it helps fire, you know, it helps your traps. It helps just kind of lubricate everything and get your traps to work smoothly in the cold, super cold weather. So, you know, you go through and you treat your trap set with antifreeze, whether it be wax dirt or be propylene glycol, like an odorless antifreeze. You can keep that dirt from freezing around there. That wax will help that trap fire really fast so that you don't have any toe catches. Now, you, ideally, you want to catch that animal above that pad.
Yeah.
If you can get a coyote or fox or bobcat above that pad, they're there till you check the next morning. So,
yeah, so
that's the main thing for prep. And that takes care of your scent, too.
Yeah, and while you're talking about that, Eddie, weather like we've had the last few days where we had some freezing rain and you know, some light mist and all this fog and then freezing temperatures coming in, I guess doing this process is going to help keep those traps from freezing up?
It will. And when you're talking about weather like we've had, your wax dirt mm-hmm. is probably your best friend in that situation. Because this time of year, I've never done the wax dirt. I've seen it done. It's quite a process. That wax dirt will not freeze.
Okay.
And it won't freeze because it lets the water pass through that dirt and keeps it loose.
Hmm.
So this time of year is a tough time for a trapper if you don't do wax dirt, because it'll thaw out, and then, you know, that moisture comes up and then it freezes back, and next thing you know, they're tap dancing on your trap and it's not going off.
Yeah.
So it is a struggle this time of year. So,
well, then
needs to be ready to, you know, prepared for that.
Right. And I got a question on that then. So when you go and check your traps next morning, you've had that freeze overnight. Do you set your traps off if there's nothing in them? Do you set them off on purpose and then rebury them to make sure that they're loose and ready to go?
Yes, I will.
Okay.
Yep. And sometimes they won't even set off. I mean, I'll take my hammer and I'll punch the pan down, and you can see if the pan's down and everything's loose, it's just not going off. And when you flip it out, it might be a solid chunk of frozen dirt.
Hmm.
So, yeah, that tells me I need to work a little harder on trying to antifreeze that trap set.
Okay. Hey, talking about traps real quick before we wrap it up here, we just got a couple minutes left. Talk about the components in a trap. So if we're looking at that trap, because our listeners that may be new to this, what do you call the pan? What do you call the arms? Talk about the materials in a trap.
So on a trap, you know, you've got several components to a trap. You've got a base plate, which is what ties everything together. And then you have jaws. That's the half moon arms. So you'll spread those jaws out. And then you have a dog that flips over one of those arms and it tucks under the pan. The pan is what you want that animal to step on. So, So you'll pry the jaws open, you'll flip the dog over the jaw, and it'll hook under the pan. And then whenever you're setting that, you know, when you're setting your trap, you want to make sure you've got something. I normally use polyfill stuffing. I'll poke it under my pan, and that keeps dirt from getting under your pan so that when they step on that, it'll still drop down and fire off. So as it pushes down, it slips the dog out from underneath the pan, and it flips off of the arms, and the arms close, and the jaws catch the coyote. So, and your better traps will have what's called center swivels. So on your base plate, you want that swivel to be in the center of that base plate so that whenever that coyote's trying to pull, it doesn't have the opportunity to slide from one side of the jaws to the other. Because if it pulls and it twists and it's swiveled off the center of that base plate, that trap will always turn with them and prevent them from breaking a leg. That's the main goal, is you don't want to cause any undue harm to these animals. I mean, I've stuck my hands in a trap several times just to show people that they don't break bones. That's not your goal. If you break a bone, then you're more than likely going to lose that animal. So.
Yeah, and I know guys in the trapping world, and I've heard a number of guys that trap, that is ultimately one of the goals, is to catch that animal cleanly, not to put that animal in harm's way with the trap. And that, I guess, maybe not the proper way to say that, but you don't want that animal to suffer.
No, that's the last thing we want. My wife videotaped me here a few years back. I was remaking a set that a deer had actually tripped, and I reset the trap and I put my hand in it. You know, she videoed it. You know, I talked about that on there. You know, the trappers a lot of times get a bad rap, but they're probably some of your most effective predator control methods out there. You know, because those traps are hunting 24 hours a day. Yep. They don't take a break. They don't get cold. They don't get hungry. They're out there all day long.
Yeah, so, question for you, Eddie. Analysis of everything we've talked about today. What have you got to say to anybody out there about becoming a trapper or predator hunter? And also, what are the season dates? When does trapping and predator hunting end here in Missouri?
You're picking my brain now. I haven't looked at the book. the predator hunting, coyotes is typically year round with a lull right before turkey season. I'd have to look at the dates to be 100% certain.
Why don't look it up, or Redbone will while we're talking.
Yeah. So yeah, I'd say, cause you're trapping, I think trapping season usually starts around November 15th and you've got different end dates for certain critters. So like your water trapping a lot of times will run longer than your land trapping, for like beaver and otter and stuff like that. It used to be January 31st for land trapping, but I was thinking they extended that to middle of February. I'd have to look. But yeah. So now like your bobcat season ends. There's an actual season on bobcats, and I think it's November 15th to
February 29th.
Is it February 29th? Okay.
Yep.
I was thinking mid-February, because it used to be January 31st. That's why I was afraid to comment, because I knew they'd made some changes. So, but yeah, I hadn't had a whole lot of time to hunt much this year, and I was saving some of my spots for the tournament. But now that the tournament's over, I'm probably going to be hitting it a little harder. So. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, we actually are out of time. And I wish we weren't, because we could go on and on and on.
Yeah.
And we will go on with the bonus segment, but you can only hear it over on the podcast. Wayne, tell people how they can listen to more with Eddie Owens on the podcast.
Just go to your favorite podcast carrier, type in American Roots Outdoors, click like, follow, subscribe, whatever it asks you to do. You'll get an update every week when we release one. And just FYI, the new rankings came out this week. We are ranked 121 in the nation right now.
All right. Very good. All right, Eddie, I know Alex will want to kind of wrap things up here, but I would like to say thanks. And when are you going to make it back down to my neck of the woods and do some coyote control? Because I'd like to go with you.
Well, that's a good question. A lot of it depends on the weather and my schedule. But hopefully within the next month, I'll be down that direction.
All right. Well, let me know, please, because I'd love to go and just sit and watch, if nothing else.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Well, Eddie, again, thank you for being a great guest, an educator to all of our listeners. It's very informative. And, Eddie, I know you love the Ozarks and you love to share your knowledge. That being said, I just want to say to all of our listeners, teach your boys to be men. Teach your girls to be ladies. And always remember,
when your roots run deep and strong,
there's no reason to fear the wind.
So you never gotta worry what the wind might do. American Roots.
Thank you for joining us for today's American Roots Outdoors Radio with Alex Rutledge. You can find us on Facebook. Look us up on the World Wide Web at AmericanRootsOutdoors.com. We'll be back again next week on this great radio station. Hey, deer hunters, are you looking for an easy-to-use product to help enhance your food plots and enhance the health of your overall deer herd? You need to check out Soil Pro Outdoors. They are the soil health experts. They've developed a revolutionary and groundbreaking approach to taking food plots to the next level. It's easy to use, can be applied with something as simple as a handheld sprayer. Enhance antler size, the health of your herd, and the health of your soil. Soil Pro Outdoors help produce the highest quality forage possible. All natural approach to improving soil health. Find them on Facebook at Soil Pro Outdoors. Soil Pro Outdoors, the soil health expert.
What we do from a whippoorwill to an old owl's hoot. Sitting still till it's time to shoot. American Roots. Take it to a holler. Take it to a feel. Across the creek of a big old hill, year after year.
Eagle Seed presents Welcome Back to American Roots Outdoors, our bonus segment. Again, this is wrapping up the show. If you listen to this, you're listening to probably your favorite podcast carrier to American Roots Outdoors. Again, we're covering wildlife management. This is part four, segment four, five of the show. With Eddie Owens, and I'm going to turn it over to Wayne and Redbone, and we're going to obtain more knowledge from Eddie Owens. Take it over, gentlemen.
Eddie, welcome back to the show. We're going to kind of pick up right where we left off, and that was, you were talking about the care of the traps, getting them ready before you go out to the field, and how to boil them, and like I was saying on break there, I think you were holding out on us the last couple of years, because I don't remember you giving that tip about the wax and the boiling water, so... now I've got your last bit of tip there, so I should now start catching stuff.
Well, you know, they say a magician doesn't tell all their tricks.
That's right. You don't tell all the secrets. Don't tell all the secrets. All right, so, you know, I'd like to start here, and during the radio portion of the show, and folks might want to go back and listen, we're talking about bait, and I think Eddie knows this, that in the springtime, and this goes back to running coyotes with dogs. And I know Eddie's been down and done some of that in my particular neck of the woods. But the guys that do that locally, they know that I butcher chickens in the spring, usually about 25. And they tell me where to go put all the guts and stuff from the chickens I butcher, because they have a pile they like me to put those on, because that's where they release the dogs when they're running coyotes, because them coyotes are going to come to that pile and then dispersed from there, and the dogs are likely to get on a scent right there. So just a little hint that I wanted to throw out there for anybody that likes to run cows with dogs. If you know somebody that does that in the springtime, butchers chickens, and you like to run them in the spring, there you go. And Eddie, that's good for everybody out there, because if not, I just have to put those chicken innards in the trash, and the trash man would probably cancel me.
Probably. And I'd say the coyotes probably appreciate you dumping them out there anyway. You know, we gotta take care of all animals, you know, not just deer and turkey and everything else. I mean, they've got a purpose. You know, they are nature's garbage disposals.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
It's like everything else. You got to keep them in check.
Yeah, it's just like the buzzards and all that stuff. I mean, if it wasn't for buzzards, we'd have dead coyotes and coons and possums all over the highways all the time.
And I think that's one misconception that people get about people that hunt coyotes and trappers, and that is that we're not out there to annihilate them and eliminate them off the face of the earth. Even though we joke sometimes that, hey, my deer hunt becomes a coyote hunt as soon as I see one. We're not saying we're going to shoot and kill every single one that's in our county, because like you said, Eddie, they do serve a purpose. I mean, they're put there for a reason, so long as you keep them in check. It's when they get out of control that all of a sudden now it starts affecting the population you want on your property.
Yeah. You know, coyote is probably one of the most resilient creatures on the face of the planet.
Yeah.
They really are. I mean, because I don't know any other animal that you could hold a competition solely for killing these animals and still have the population that we have. If you have an area that's holding, say if you've got 10 coyotes in that square mile, that's a lot of coyotes for a square mile. But say if you got 10 coyotes in that square mile, each jip, each female, she may only have one or two pups, because that's all their little quadrant can sustain.
Yeah.
But say if you go in there and you kill half of those or three quarters of those, well, now her body is saying, we can feed 10 pups. So they may have 10 pups that season, not one or two. You know, it's amazing how God designed these critters that they can control their own population to a certain degree.
Yeah, so, and I think that is absolutely amazing to me. And I heard that from another coyote hunter probably 10 years ago on the show. And I thought, oh, he's got to be pulling my leg here. And I actually went and looked it up, and it absolutely is true. And the biological makeup of a coyote is they won't have more pups than what their region can sustain. And that's why it would be basically impossible to wipe them off the face of the planet.
Oh, yeah. I think the most I've ever heard one coyote having was 14 pups.
Mm. Oh, boy.
It's hard to, it'd be hard to wipe them out when they're reproducing like that.
Yeah, okay.
I say 14 pups sounds like a good area to hunt in 3 years.
Oh, I know it, right?
Or 2 years.
6 months.
Right.
You know, you go in that area in October, and you're going to be calling in packs of coyotes. Mm.
That's true. Yeah, them young ones will stick together for quite a while.
Well, that takes me to a question here, Eddie. Have you ever been on a set and you have called in a pack of coyotes? I mean, say like 7 or 8 all at one time coming in.
I've never called in more than 4.
Okay.
And I think, I'd say that was probably the entire pack of pups that I called in.
Wow.
Because whenever they answer howled at me, I was like, that's them some young coyotes. Well, I switched over into some rabbit distress after they answered me. And I mean, here they come, just it's almost single file line trying to get that call. And we ended up getting 2 of those. Two of them got away from us. But I mean, if you're shooting rifles and you get 50% of a pack of 4, you're doing pretty good.
Yeah, I would think so. You always shoot the one in the back of the line?
Well, it all depends on how far they're spread out. These were spread out about 200 yards.
Oh, okay.
So I let the wife, usually I'll have the wife get on. I usually have her get on the back coyote, but these here, they didn't really race each other all the way to the call. When they hit about the 300 or 400 yard mark, they kind of spread out to single file.
Yeah.
So we shot the first one, and then the second one, we hit it as it was going in the brush. And then the third and fourth one, they were gone by the time we got turned on them.
Yeah.
So, but in ideal situation, if they're all chasing themselves, chasing each other to the call, that's a good shotgun stand is what that is.
Okay.
That's where you a shotgun with some BB or number 4 buck and semi-automatic, you can really knock the coyotes down like that.
Yeah, I've always heard if you're hog hunting and a bunch of hogs are coming in, always shoot the trailing hog. Because if you shoot the one in the front and he falls, then they're going to disperse.
Right.
But if you just keep knocking off the one in the back, they'll just keep going.
Hmm.
Yeah. And there is a lot of truth to that, especially if you're shooting suppressed.
Yeah.
If you're shooting suppressed, that would be the way to go. If you call in a pair, though, I will throw this tip out there. If you call in a pair and there is an obvious size difference, shoot the small one first.
And why is that?
Because if you shoot the small one, typically that's the female. If you shoot a female, there's a good chance you'll get a follow-up shot at that male. But if you kill that male, that female does not care, and she is gone. Mm. So if you shoot the female first, the male might run off in the brush, but if you flip over to a coyote or a distressed coyote, you're probably going to call that male back out.
Gonna come back.
That's his mate. You know, the males are a little more partial to the females than the other way around. So that female knows that if my mate gets killed, I'll just go find another one. The male doesn't have that same mindset.
Just like real life.
Exactly.
Hey, one last trapping question before we have to cut off the bonus segment here. But, you know, we talked about prepping the traps, buying traps, and that kind of stuff. What about where to put the traps? And we got about four minutes here. But, you know, my first thought is logging roads. Just from deer hunting, where do I see a lot of the tracks? Logging roads seems to be, you know, one of my spots I see most of my tracks.
Pond banks.
Pond banks. And then, of course, my one food plot that for some reason they're there every third night. But, you know, what do you suggest? How do new people, or even, you know, guys that aren't new to this, where do you suggest they set up for the first time?
Aside from my front porch.
Right.
So what I like to do, you hit it there with the log roads. If you find log roads, pretty much anywhere on a log road, especially if you're finding scat. So if you find scat, try and set up a trap pretty close to that. Brushy fence rows, if you have an old gate opening, they like those. They don't like to try and fight through a brushy fence row if they're just traveling, looking, mousing, that type of stuff. So old fence rows with gate openings, I like to concentrate on those gate openings. It's like a funnel. It's like deer hunting. You know, if you find a natural funnel for deer, it's a good place to set up for a bow stand. Yep. Same thing with traps. So if you can find those areas, then that's where you want to look at your prevailing wind. So try and set it up to where if they cut through that fence, the wind blowing through that, you know, crossing that open gate, that gate crossing, that they'll catch the wind of the, you know, catch the scent of your bait and come on in and inspect your setup.
And one more thing real quick, Eddie, before we do have to wrap it up because we're running real fast out of time. How often do you check that trap after you set it? Do you wait 12 hours, 24 hours? I mean, what is the norm?
If I'm not mistaken, for Missouri, for land trapping, you're not allowed to use like body grip traps unless you're hunting in water. So your foothold traps require a 24-hour check.
Gotcha.
So I'll set them. I'll usually try to set them midday when the critters aren't on the move. And then I'll come back and I'll check every morning right after daylight. Because once that sun comes up, then animals start getting nervous that they're in that trap and they could possibly break their leg or chew their foot off. So I'm pretty sure Missouri requires a 24-hour check.
I think that's right.
But I would do that regardless just because I don't want to lose an animal.
Yeah, and you never know. Right out there at daylight, you may see another one out across the field.
Yeah.
Right.
You should.
Well, I've got a tip for everybody. If it's in your budget, you set every camera, every trap with a WiseEye data cam. And instantly, when you catch something in that trap, it comes right to your iPad, your laptop, your computer, or your iPhone, your smartphone, and you know you got these critters caught. Then you go get the critters out. So that's a tip. If you want to use trail cameras like the WiseEye data cam, there's no more guessing checking traps.
And then also, you also learn a lot about how an animal reacts to your set, too, with that trail cam.
That's right.
You know, you can see how they're coming in, how cautious and leery them animals are when they're coming up to those sets. So, yeah.
We're doing this now. A lot of trappers are doing it. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's the advantage of the video portion on those cameras. Well, hey, guys, we got to wrap up the bonus segment here. We are out of time, unfortunately. Again, Eddie, we could talk days and days and shows and shows.
Yes.
And we've only covered 10% of what you needed to share with us. And I'm sure we're going to get you back on again to try and cover at least another 10%. You know? But, you know, we're still waiting for that book to come out on Amazon. So I'll keep checking weekly on that. And I will bug you until you write it. So, Alex.
Again, guys, thank you again. What a wonderful show. We've educated a lot of listeners and entertain them as well. And again, take a kid hunting. Share the outdoors with a kid. It's God's creation. It's up to you and me to keep this great sport of the outdoors, hunting and trapping and predator hunting traditions. We've got to take and educate these kids and teach people that it is God's okay to do these things. And that being said, teach your boys to be men. Teach your girls to be ladies. And always remember,
when your roots run deep and strong,
there's no reason to fear the wind.
In my old pair of hunting boots, passed on down, planted deep in the ground, around your heart, so you never gotta worry, hey, what the wind.